great tone. Everyone can tell what it is, but how do you get it? With so many styles of music, with new gear coming out almost daily, what's the secret to great tone? Welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast Radio Show, where we talk about tone, what it is, and how to get it. With your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill, we will talk to the creators of tone, the manufacturers, and the players, as we explore tone and the gear that gets it. And now, here are your hosts, Jeff Floro and Scott Sill.
The Flow Guitar Enthusiast is proud to use Audio Technica headphones for our show. Audio Technica has a great rebate going on to the end of the year. If you purchase a select 40 series microphone, you get a free set of Studio M50 headphones from Audio Technica. To learn more about it, go to their website, www.audio-technica.com. With that, welcome to the Flow Guitar Enthusiast. Welcome, Jeff.
Hey, Scott. How you doing?
I am doing good. What have you been up to?
Well, I actually did a session for the USA girls and did some guitar work and tried out those Celestion speakers, and they sounded really good using the Creamback and the Classic.
The Classic 80?
Yeah, the Classic gave it a lot of low mid punch. It was a lot punchier.
I think that's funny you say that, because to me, I thought actually the Classic 80 was more of like harmonics and highs, and the Creamback gave you the mids and lows. But hey, you know, we're all...
Yeah, no, we tried, I experimented with a friend of ours had passed away, and a guy you know, Henry Sendejas, a guitarist, came by, and he wanted to do a guitar piece for the funeral. So he brought his Strat down, and we tried that through the Chupacabra, and it sounded beyond Hendrix. It was great. It was a great sound.
Very cool.
So,
well, I myself this week, I actually ended up getting a Taylor T3B sent from Taylor. So that's the guitar that's a semi-hollow body from them. Has a Bigsby on it. This particular one is in natural finish with a quilt top. Beautiful guitar. I'll be doing a demo on that this week. So look for that on my YouTube channel. And I want to let everybody listening to know that this is the last week to register for the Eminence Governor Speaker Giveaway. So if you want an Eminence Governor Speaker, then make sure to register for that on our website, www.flowguitarenthusiast.com. And let's see here, what else is new? Oh, so pretty soon we'll have a Wampler Slow Stortion pedal giveaway, autographed by Brian Wampler himself. And we have some Audio Technica gear to give away. So make sure you go to our website and check for that information. And future guests we have are John Five, Steve Hunter, Jason Sine is next week.
Yes.
We have 65 Amps is coming up. I just booked TV Jones, so that will be very cool. And working on some other big amp manufacturers, but we'll let you know as soon as we have them confirmed.
Sounds great. Well, let's go ahead and just dive right in. It's a pleasure to have here today in studio some friends of mine that I've known for a long time, especially the bass player. I've known Lou for ages. We've played together. We've done sessions together. And his guitar player, Bill Wiseman, are in. We're waiting. Jim Javier is on his way, the drummer. He got caught in traffic, and he was from a session. So we're waiting for him to come on in. But before I introduce them, I'm going to play a clip from their new EP. It's called She Knows She Wants It. And some beautiful stuff. Here we go. Welcome, Lou Castro, Bill Wiseman of We Three.
Hello.
It's great to have you here. Now, I'm just going to throw it right out there. What were you using on that bass? That was a great bass sound.
That's a Carruthers fretless five string through a what is it? A U5, and then the loop is my jazz bass played through a loop.
Oh, okay.
And with a mute on it too. There's a mute on it. And then at the same time that that's going on, there's a Music Man five string just playing boom.
Yeah.
Boom. So there's actually three bass tracks there.
Now, is that a harmonizer or a flanger or a chorus on
that? That's
there?
A chorus unit.
Now, did you use a pedal or did you do that post?
That's a pedal. That's a TC Electronics chorus unit.
That's a nice sound. That's a really interesting sound.
Is that the stereo chorus one?
It is a stereo chorus, but I didn't run it stereo.
Well, I know, but I mean, you know, that's the one that, you know, like Eric Johnson uses, all those guys.
This is the little green one.
Oh, this is not the one that Eric
Johnson
uses.
This is not the black one.
Yeah.
This is the green. This is the green one. This is the green one. Well, I have one of those old ones too, but it, after about 10 or 15 years, it kind of gave up the ghost.
Ah.
It was good while it lasted.
Now, also too, Bill, we'll be getting into more of the guitar stuff. There's a bunch of clips that I have that show your different guitar stuff. Which, did you use just one guitar on this album, or did you use several? Because I know you are endorsed by Hohner, and you have a beautiful Hohner jazz guitar.
Yeah, Hofner.
Hofner, but, I'm sorry.
Yeah, oh, that's okay. On this particular, on these,
I'm terrible.
On this, on these tracks, it was only the Hofner. I didn't use any other guitars on this one, but I was able to get all the other sounds that I needed, you know, through that.
Is that your? Is that the Hofner that has like ebony through everything, pretty
yeah,
much?
It's ebony everything.
Might as well just be ebony fretboard ebony frets
yeah,
too.
Yeah, ebony fretboard, ebony pickguard, ebony tailpiece. It had an ebony bridge, but I switched that out. I had to put a tunematic in there because the intonation. Yeah, it was just a wooden free bridge, mm-hmm. and I just I couldn't deal with that because it kept moving.
Yeah,
I had some work done on it, but yeah, I just love the tones on it.
Yeah, if you go to the our Facebook page, the Flow Guitar Enthusiast, there's a album, a photo album called JP's Amp Cave, where Jean-Pierre Durand of Incendio, we had an amp shootout. We were trying a bunch of different things, and we three came down in force. And you had that guitar then, and we took some pictures of it.
Oh.
It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful guitar.
I have it on my phone too.
Yeah. Now, I've seen pictures. Do you have a YouTube channel, right?
Yes.
Lou, is it just We Three?
It's We Three.
We Three. Because I've seen you play live on the YouTube channel, and you used a ES-175, if I'm correct.
I had that guitar for most of my life. For graduating high school, my father had bought this guitar for me, and it was like the Joe Pass guitar. I was lucky enough in my life to be able to study a couple lessons with him. I was in Cleveland, and that's the guitar I always wanted, and I've had it for years. And then about 2 years ago, at a gig, the guitar was starting to it was starting to sound strange, and I saw there's a crack up there, and I had fixed it. You know, right up at the top of the neck. But then a couple weeks later, after it was fixed, it completely snapped. And then I got it fixed again, but it didn't have the tone. And I didn't know what to do. And I looked around for another guitar. And I was thinking, what can I sell? You know, what can I do? I need another guitar. And then at the NAMM show, I was lucky enough to, you know, I talked to the guy at Hofner, and he presented this guitar to me, which I was very, very happy. To say the least.
Yeah, no, it's a great guitar. But the stuff that you were doing with that 175 in those clips was pretty amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, so now, you guys started in 2009, this band.
Yes.
You guys have been playing for a long time. Your background, you were in Las Vegas, and in fact, I think that's where you and Jim originally came from, drummer.
Actually, Lou and I, we've been playing at least since 94.
Maybe even farther back, 92, because we were one of the first guys to play at the Kibitz Room at Canner's.
I remember that.
Well, the way that came about was there was a waiter there named Eric Gold. God bless him. He was a great tenor sax player, and he heard me playing with a singer-songwriter guy named Paul Korda, and he comes up to me and he goes, I think you'd sound good in my jazz band. And I'm kind of looking at him going, really? Because that was, I mean, I'd always listen to it, but to actually get to do it was pretty a lot of fun. We had a piano player originally, and then he kind of bailed, and all of a sudden Bill shows up, and then that was the start of my education.
So you guys had met earlier from there.
Yeah, I guess so. That was it. But in I guess a lot. Well, I started off in Cleveland, but I had a chance to teach jazz guitar at the University of Las Vegas in the 80s. And that's where I was there, and I played all the showrooms and all the all that and all the lounges for a long time. But I always wanted to come out here. I almost came out here to the USC, but I was a little bit too late to get in. They would have taken me a year later, but I got the gig at the school. So I thought I'd do that for a few years. But then I came out here, and that's when you wrote the book. The Guitar Like Piano series was written in Cleveland with a man named Phil Rizzo, who used to arrange for Stan Kenton. Mm-hmm. He wrote a bunch of theory books, and the premise is a lot of guitar players memorize chords or just like, I know this and this and that, but they don't actually know what the notes are, like inside the chords, or they can actually hear the chords. And this is more like you're being a piano player. You can play all the voicings up and down the fretboard. If you want to put an alteration, a flat 9, an augmented 9th, augmented 11th, you actually can hear it. You can put it in as you do it. You're not just stuck with just one chord. And by knowing all this, I've always had a chance to play with piano players, and I don't get in the way because mm-hmm. I can hear what they're doing. And they generally like me. They don't give me those weird looks like in the session or something.
Well, you fit in. You know how to voice it so that you do fit into the pocket. So, no, I remember when I was in school, I had a class with Jack Marshall, who was an arranger in town, did a lot of studio stuff. Mm-hmm. And the thing that was interesting about him, he said being a guitar player, it gave him a unique perspective when it came time for when arranging, because you think like a guitarist, you voice like a guitarist, and it's different than a keyboard player.
Definitely.
So, and it gets an interesting sound, and it's definitely a different sound than what a traditional piano-based composer or arranger is.
Right.
So, and Jim Javier's in. Welcome. He got in while we were talking.
Hello.
You were from Vegas, too, right? You gigged a lot in Vegas before you came out here.
Well, I'm from New Bedford, Mass., East Coast, Massachusetts. And I it was just the casino world in general, not really Vegas. But been in a couple of casino bands, one of which is where I met Bill. But every other big casino town outside of Vegas, Reno, Lake Tahoe, Laughlin, and a lot of other smaller areas as well. Everywhere but Vegas. Vegas was kind of sewn up at the time, so to speak. But we played everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the second band. It was basically a swing band that played everything. It was a variety band, but mainly focused on swing. It was in that band that I met Bill.
Mm-hmm.
And was in that band with him for about a year. We both eventually left and then, hooked up out here. We were both from here living at that time. And we were talking about playing, and he's like, you got to meet Lou. So that's how that whole thing happened.
Did you play at the Kibitz Room with them too?
Not way back when, but within the past couple of years, we were doing some Monday nights
there.
So
you've all kibitzed.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
We've all kibitzed. Yes.
We've all kibitzed.
Now, I'm going to play another clip. This is called Malibu. It's a clip, especially, it has the bass lead. And then I'm going to go into some of the first album. This is from the We Three EP. And then we're going to go, and I want to talk about the differences, what you did differently, and your approach. So let me play this little clip. It's a beautiful little solo, if I may say so, here. That an upright?
No, that's the Carruthers again through the Avalon U5 with nothing on it except for maybe a pinch of reverb.
That sounds like an upright. You fooled me. That's a beautiful sound. That's a really good tone. Now, you were using an acoustic.
I was using. I'm sorry, but I was just heard I'm going. Oh, I did use another guitar. I did use my Yamaha acoustic. It sounds amazing. I've had it for years, and I detuned it to a lot of different. It's not necessarily a tuning, but I came up with something in C sharp that really worked, and I did a whole sorts of different chords that worked along with the song.
Yeah, it works really nice. What kind of, do you know which model number it is, the Yamaha?
Oh my goodness, FG350.
Oh wow, okay.
And it's from 1978, and it was their top of the line back then. But I just wanted a sort of, to go, acoustic guitar that it's just something that sounds good. But I didn't realize how great it sounded.
It's a sweet sounding acoustic. Yeah. It's really, really nice. Yeah. I'm going to play another clip of that from the first album, and I presume you use that same Yamaha?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's the same guitar. Before I do that, though, Jim, what are you using?
excuse me. For drums, mainly Yamaha.
Mm-hmm.
Usually it's the Maple Custom Absolutes with a Pearl Free Floater snare. Mostly Zildjians, mm-hmm. as far as cymbals go. Occasionally a Sabian thrown in there. I'm not locked into any one company, so to speak, so I have lots of different equipment that you acquire over the years, which is nice to be able to pick and choose anything that's appropriate for the gig or for the recording or whatnot. But drum-wise, I really like it's Yamaha drums with DW pedals, basically.
Okay. And you don't, when you do the sessions, you don't mix and match? Do you have like other, like Ludwig or Premier?
The snare I use is usually a Pearl Free Floater, so that's apart from Yamaha. It's mostly with the cymbals that I have a mixed bag of stuff. Most of the drums are Yamaha. I just really like, just about it. Even their low lines, their Stage Custom, which is the entry level kit from Yamaha, even those sound really, really good.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just, definitely a quality sounding instrument. And with cymbals, it's mostly Zildjian with, a few Sabians here, a couple Pasties there, but mostly Zildjian.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first album was a more progressive album. I have some clips we're going to play in a minute and get into that. This new EP is a much more commercial effort. What was your mindset when you were working on the EP? Where were you trying to go with it? Anybody?
We didn't really have a thing in mind. We just came up with these songs. We thought, okay, this is more of a pop approach. We'll throw it out. And it'd been like a year and a half or so since we put that first CD out, so we wanted to put something out in the interim. And basically, like I said, She Knows She's Got It started out with a bass loop that I wrote about 3 o'clock in the morning after I got home from a gig. And I played it for the guys, and they go, oh, that's great. And then they look at me and they go, hey, play a melody. And I go, well, I thought you're going to play the melody.
They tried to get me to play it, but then I thought, no, it sounds better for the bass. Because everybody always hears, the guitar playing the melody. But I, came up with the little bridge thing,
Right.
Yeah, so then...
How they clear the room, though, is with the bass solo.
No.
Yeah, no, I think that it works. I think mm-hmm. that was a good decision.
Because
it is a different sound. And there is... On both of the discs that you guys did, there's just a lot of interesting bass stuff. You're doing all sorts of little stuff, and I think on some of the on the first album you did some overdubs. You're doing a bunch of different little things going on.
Actually, the first album there are no overdubs at all.
Really?
No.
Because you're all over the place. And I don't mean that in a busy way.
We cut those 13 tracks in 9 hours.
And even the guitar solos were pretty much like that, except for the. I don't know which one that you've queued up, but there's an acoustic guitar solo, which I think I put that in. But, it's all live.
That was at the behest of our friend Arlen Scharbaum. He said, come on over. He goes, we'll do it at my house. And he basically engineered, and then the four of us mixed it. And it went really quick.
Mm-hmm.
Went really quick. It helped that we had rehearsed a little bit.
I noticed that the first album is more progressive. You're going into a lot of different styles. But I even noticed on your videos, you go even farther. You're much more progressive there. Let me play a clip. This is called Aquabong from the first album. This is a real interesting bass groove. I really like this, and it kind of exemplifies that kind of prog feel. That's an interesting bass, and in what you're doing, Bill, with the guitar, it's interesting how that works without not walking over each other.
Should we tell them how it came about?
Sure.
About the
Jethro,
think of Jethro Tull, and I said, remember this song? Dun, 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 dun. Mm-hmm. And then he goes.
We were sitting there going, hey, you remember Aquabon? Yeah, sure. Dun, 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 dun. And they go, what would happen if we rewrote it? So that's our way of rewriting Aqualung by Jethro Tull.
That was interesting. But I mean the counterpoint.
But then after he got to, and then I came up with this lick. I don't know where they come from, but sometimes they just come out. And then I didn't know what I was doing for the longest time. But I said let's record it because I have no idea what's going on. And it was just it's so bizarre how it comes in and how they all of a sudden there's a space and then it's there. Oh gosh. I still think about it.
We still have nightmares.
You still have nightmares.
Now, yeah. What were you using on that cut?
That was my 175. God rest its little body.
And then what amp were you using?
That was my Boogie amp. I have a Mesa Boogie from Randall Smith that he made in the garage from 1976.
Oh, wow.
And that's what I used through this whole session.
Do you know what speakers are inside that?
No, on this one, at that point, there was an Altec, which was a little bit more brittle. I wanted to get the JBL, but at that time I was playing a lot of pop music and more rock stuff, so the Altec could really handle the watts. I was playing more really the harder rock stuff. But I just recently got an EV for it, and it's just amazing. It just handles it. It sounds great. It grabs every note. I was always using a Fender amp, but twin, but this one it just sounds so great. So I've been bringing it to more gigs lately.
Is your EV an Alnico or a ceramic or?
It's the Zach Wild model. It holds 300 watts.
Probably ceramic. He doesn't seem like an Alnico sort of.
No. 300 watts, I really doubt if it's Alnico.
It doesn't distort. It's just you hear the tone, and it's amazing.
It speaks really well, especially in a live situation.
Yeah. Now, what was your amp on this?
That was my Music Man Stingray 5 through a Mackie M1400, and then the preamp was an Alembic F2B.
Okay, yeah.
Through a little Gauss 15-inch speaker.
Oh, okay. Now, is that what you use now when you play?
No. Now I use a Crown. What is it? X1500, I think it is, with a Fender TBP1 preamp through an SWR Goliath 3, and I'm looking around trying to replace that speaker case because I want something a little bit bigger.
A bigger sound?
Well, the SWR's got a great sound, but I can foresee the day when I won't be able to get parts for it.
Right. Do you think you'll buy amp or you don't?
I will buy amp at some point, but I've avoided it so far. I haven't needed it. I mean, I'd love to. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of just getting something that's powerful enough and some speaker cases that'll handle it, which it's out there.
Because the Lou I remember was an SVT with 810s.
Oh yeah, no, the SVT. No. That was the one. That was the one that caught on fire on stage.
That's pretty amazing. You were using the Boogie live.
Yeah, I've been using it the last month. I've been using it live just to try it out. And then everybody seems like we played recently at the Cafe Cordial about a month and a half ago, and I was using my Fender. And I just found that certain frequencies just didn't come out. But this last time we just played the other night, And a friend of mine came out, and he didn't even know I had the boogie. He goes, man, I could hear every single note. Everything, it sounded great.
Oh, that's very good. Now, and your Fender, which Fender amp do you have, and what speakers do you have in that?
Well, I just kept the stock speakers. That's that might be part of it. But I have one. They used to call it the Evil Twin. It's called the Twin Amp, and it's got 100 watts RMS, and it's only a one channel in that you can switch between two different channels. And I used it live when I was on the road a lot of times, just to get that overdriven sound, so you don't have to use a pedal for the distortion. You're getting an actual tube sound when you're getting the distortion. But it, again, like I said, it just sort of lacks a little bit of something. That mm-hmm. the characteristic, well, you know, with the
that's a tube amp.
That's a tube amp, yes.
Is that a tweed or is that a black?
No, it's black, but it's about 10 years old now. They don't make them anymore.
Okay.
But it was just a special thing they made a few years ago. It's very clean. It's just I'm sort of going back to my boogie amp again.
Okay, because now I noticed that when you play live, you push it a little bit more.
Yeah.
You're using a lot more distortion on the albums. You don't. Any particular reason, or you just your feel?
He's anti-distortion.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, I usually try not to do it. If you hear it, it's like, oh, I'm trying not to. But depends on the song. You know, if it needs a little something, a little grit, you know, I can do that. But I've been through that. My dad, who's probably listening right now, when I was a kid, was like, I need this fuzz tone. And I had this Univox fuzz tone, which right now, I mean, he paid maybe $30 for it. I think it's worth probably $800 now.
Sure.
But it had the Black Sabbath sound, and it had the other really nasty sound. But, you know, I just love that, and I love that sound. But he's like, why don't you turn that thing off? He's probably laughing right now. Well, because you couldn't hear the guitar tone. Because, you know, and that's really true. You want to be able to hear, you know, you got to be able to hear your tone first, what you got going. You don't want to hide behind anything. So.
No, that's true. So but when you did crank up the 175, it did have a nice sound. I mean, on those videos, it was pretty interesting.
The pickups are a lot to do with it. The Seymour Duncan pickups are amazing. I have them in all my guitars. I had the PAF style on the back pickup, and the Jazz in the front. And the PAF one is the same one that Holdsworth used, you know, like when he was, you know, before he went to Carbon, of course. But that was the same style from the 80s, and I've been using those ever since. Mm-hmm. Not that I was trying to – I wouldn't use that for a rock session, you know, that the 175, but you can still get that overdriven thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, with that.
Yeah, you have those pickups on the Hofner, or you have Hofner pickups?
I just recently took the pickups out of the Hofner. Sorry. I have these – they're Seymour Duncan, but they're the Benedetto pickups, and I had to put a one on the bridge, well, close to the bridge, so I can get the more edgy harmonic stuff, because I was lacking that, and I was thinking I'm going to have to get another guitar, but now that I have that pickup set up, and now that I'm using the other amp, I'm pretty darn happy with the way everything's going.
What are you using in the rhythm pickup?
Same one, Benedetto. Same exact pickup, but they're really good. They're primo pickups. If have you ever
I haven't used. I mean, most of my guitars are the original ones on them, but
They're just for a guitar that I'll show you a picture if there's a break. And they don't actually mount in the guitar. They're mounted on top of the guitar, so they're not. There's no holes in the guitar. It's like an acoustic guitar, and it's really loud. You know,
oh,
the
okay.
acoustic by itself.
It's not mounted on the pickguard?
Yeah, well, the one is mounted on the pickguard, but the other one's mounted on the actual neck.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so.
Okay, so. No, that's interesting. Now, let's talk a little bit on your approach to doing these albums. I assume that the EP, it was more of an overdub type of thing where you did layers, or was that all live? Because you have a lot of overdubs in there, right? As opposed to the first album, which it sounds like it was more of a live.
I definitely think the EP is a little bit more produced.
Right.
You know, especially when you consider that there's vocals happening, and it's definitely more produced. It's definitely more. You know, we just had a little bit more time. You know, mm-hmm. a little bit more money, so we just kind of did what we needed to do. And
now the first album, you guys just played. That was basically just. Went in there and just
Just went in there and we banged it out. We had a very limited amount of time. We had very little bread, if anything. In fact, we didn't have any.
We didn't.
Yeah. We were just lucky. Like I said,
my roommate, Arlen, was my roommate, and he just said, hey, come on in here. And he was, you know, I'll engineer. And we're just like, okay, great. Thanks, man. So we just went and did it. And, mm-hmm. It took the pressure off of us because all we had to do was play.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think, yeah, that's, well, it's obvious that you guys are pretty tight in there because the sound of the album, it's, I mean, you're doing some really complex stuff on some of it.
Yeah, and there's we try to keep the fixes to an absolute minimum. I don't think I really fixed anything. Mm-hmm. I figured, well, it's a mistake, so what? You know, I think people want to hear a little blood on the tracks.
Mm-hmm. No, that's so true. So. Now, Jim, no aspirations to do more percussion? Because I know you majored in percussion, in marching percussion?
Oh,
in school. Have you had
any? The undocumented, that's what I tell people. I went to UMass Amherst, great school. But I didn't major in music. It was my folks basically put me through, and they had that old school theory of, oh, do something else to fall back on. You know, don't get a degree in music, you know, which here I am 20 years later playing drums. But, you know, you do what you do. And I actually have a degree in economics, but I really spent all my time. They have an incredible marching band there, Minuteman Marching Band, and the head of the drumline is a worldwide known instructor named Tom Hannum. In the world of drum corps, the competitive summertime drum corps, he's in the 80s. He was the percussion head for Garfield Cadets. They won multiple championships and top drumline awards. Then he was with Star of Indiana, and he's consulted for a million other corps and written. He's in a top five of all time, and mm-hmm. that's, you know, and he kicked my butt for 4 years, basically. So yeah, it wasn't. You know, it wasn't a major, it wasn't a minor, but that's what I spent most of my time was in the old chapel where we used to rehearse in that place, mm-hmm. you know, chopping wood and working on the drums. Mm-hmm. And it's, you know, huge, great thing in my past and experience. Mm-hmm. And working with them and especially working, you know, being taught by Tom Hannum. And I did a year for when I... In 91, I marched with, or 90, I mean, with the Boston Crusaders. Mm-hmm. So actually, they were a drum corps out of Boston. And because in drum corps, once you're at 20, you can't be in a drum corps and be 22 years old. It's you age out after 21. Wow. A lot of people don't realize that. I mean, when you're watching the corps and all those amazing, amazing players, no one's over 21 years old. Mm-hmm. It's, you know, some of those kids are 17. And they're just phenomenal. You know,
amazing.
yeah, it's sick stuff. A whole other world. You mm-hmm. know, the drum corps, you're in it. When you're in it, it's like your whole world. And when you're out of it, you have no clue what's going on. It's, you know, it's one of those real big microcosms. Mm-hmm. But yeah, that's what I really did specialize in college. Mm-hmm. But as far as recording, we, you know, after we laid down the basic drum tracks, especially with the EP, you know, it was definitely fitting to add some percussion that really can round out tracks. Like Shaker is number one in the world of rounding.
You played more with percussion.
Yeah. You know, Shaker, Triangle, Tambourine. Nothing major, no hardcore conga tracks, you know, nothing like that. But tasty percussion add-ons that really... Mm-hmm. spiced up what was there and rounded out, really mm-hmm. smoothed out any edges.
Now, go ahead. All three of you guys are working session musicians. And what kind of stuff, okay, we'll start with Jim, but what kind of stuff, are you called more to play drums or play percussion or, is that, you know, what kind of stuff
definitely,
are you doing?
Definitely drums. And I'm actually, like, I love the studio. I was just recording today with a friend, but I'm, you know, 80% of what I do is actually live. I play a lot of clubs and bars and parties in Los Angeles. I play with these guys, of course, but I got a handful of regular working club bands that are, mm-hmm. you know, rock, reggae, funk, cover stuff, you know, that we grew up listening to.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the thing is, in order to stay busy, you have to be able to play, you know, any style, rock, blues, and, mm-hmm. and I sing as well, so that helps in getting phone calls, where if they could use an additional voice on the gig or whatnot.
Yeah, that comes handy.
Yeah, but definitely being versed in different styles, which all of that for all of us definitely helps in this band, because jazz is it's a good term to use because it kind of covers anything. It's open to anything, but in our music, there's rock, there's R&B, there's world, there's blues, there's Latin. Mm-hmm. You know, just whatever the song comes out as, that's what it is.
Okay.
And we've all played all those types of music, so that's what's really fun mm-hmm. about it.
Now, Lou, I've done sessions with Lou. What kind of stuff do you get called to do now? And I know that you play upright a lot, too, besides the electric bass. So are you seeing more of that, or what kind of gigs are you doing?
It depends on what the kind of style the music is. Or it could be a commercial, it could be a soundtrack, it could be a roots session, Americana music.
Mm-hmm.
It's really up to the artist what they want, so you kind of take everything with you.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I'll have a guy say, hey, can you bring your upright, because I want you to use this, and of course I'll charge him cartage.
And, yeah, that thing's big.
It is. No, but
your primary instrument's electric, right?
Well, I've been playing upright actually since the late 80s. For a long time, I borrowed one. I had a couple of friends who would loan me this one or that one.
Mm-hmm. And
it was only in the last 3 or 4 years that I actually had my own.
Because you've used a lot of different basses. I remember you with that P bass, which you still...
I still have the P bass.
The blues P bass. That should be a signature model.
My $50 wonder.
Yes.
Well, so what if you had one bass you had to choose, which would it be?
Oh.
I know this is the awful question that no one can answer.
The one that I hate it when people do. They all serve a different function. I use the P bass for the funk and the R&B and the root stuff. I also have a 57 reissue that I'll do on gigs so that I don't have to take the 61 out of the house. And then I've got a 97 jazz bass, which is really cool. Custom pickups. And, of course, some 3/5 strings. Not that much. It's just enough to get the job done.
You use the 5 strings more than the 4 strings?
No. I use the 4 strings more than the 5s. In We Three, it's always the 5 strings.
Oh, okay.
But say if I'm playing with, like, Arthur Adams or with Vivian, it's 4 string all the way.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to hear it. On a session, they might want to hear the 5 string just because of the sub bass. But most mm-hmm. of the time, it's 4 string.
That's cool. Now, Bill, what kind of stuff do you get called to do a lot?
I mean, it could be anything. Like I did this one session for this sort of swing type band. Their record just came out, and I used my jazz guitar, but. Then you can get most of the stuff, though. I play is more rock. It's more I have a couple strats, and that's what I'm usually using for most of the sessions. And I've got Les Pauls. It's like Lou said, it depends on what sound they really want. I always use my Yamaha for recording,
the acoustic,
because it always sounds amazing.
The strats and the Les Pauls, you use the Mesa Boogie.
The Mesa, a lot of times I've gone straight. There's a studio down in Pico that I play at a lot, and he's got a Boogie amp there already, but I've gone straight a lot of times. And I've got a pedal board I've got every pedal from like back in like the 70s. If somebody calls for a certain sound, I still have them. I have them all.
So basically, if you're going to distort the sound, if they want you to distort it, use a pedal as opposed to cranking the amp.
Yes, I could use an electro-harmonics, fuzz pedal that I've had since like 1975. I've got that one, but then I've got every other one that you can ever imagine on the scene right now. But for what we do here, I don't generally use those, but I have them if I need them. The last session I just did about a couple weeks ago with this guy, I didn't even use any of my pedals for distortion. He ran it through his system in Pro Tools. He had like this rack of stuff, and it was amazing. It sounded like an Eddie Van Halen setup. I would just hit the thing, it was amazing. No amp, but it actually sounded good. I couldn't believe it.
Yep. Yeah, JP from Incendio did a blues album, and he used all virtual, and I couldn't tell. I was just blew me away.
Yeah,
Bill. So I've seen you play a few times. You're quite a shredder. What do you use on string cage? What's your? Because I remember last time you were playing. I think you were playing Jeff's guitar, and I think you broke a string. I believe, because I think either you had lighter strings, maybe. I don't know.
Well, I had he broke it, but it was funny because he's like, wow, this is like effortless.
Yeah, so I'm just kind of curious.
You used heavier gauge.
For a high E, you're going to laugh, maybe. Yeah, I'm using 18.
Wow,
I go
okay.
18, 22, and 26.
Well, that would explain why you broke the string.
Yeah,
but he was doing some really cool
No, I know, bands. But I mean, if he's used to 18 and he goes to 9.
He was going up over a third. I mean, it was pretty nice.
When I first started out years ago, I would, I didn't have a bunch of guitars. I still have my SG that I used to, I played all my chords on there. I used to use 11s just for a while, and then when I knew I was playing a couple of gigs, I would go to 9s, because it was so easy. But then I went through picks like crazy, and then I started going to the Stone pick that they used to have years ago, the Mind pick. I don't know if you even remember those. But there's a couple places that sell them, but that's what I use now is the Stone pick. And also John McLaughlin was using, you know, a really hard pick, and that's what I wanted to go to because I wanted something that wouldn't wear out, that would be constant. You can't have something that's wearing down because it won't sound the same. And the strings have to be stiff because when you hit through it, you want to make sure you got the sound. Because if you're playing, especially if you're playing really fast, if you hit that thing really fast and you come back, the string, you can't tell, but it's, you know, it's bending. It's moving like this. And if you got really wimpy strings, they're going to be doing that a lot, and you won't be able to, you know, attack it on the way back. So that's one of the things. But for the rock stuff, I have 14s on the Strat.
Wow.
What do you use on your low E?
I use flat wounds. That's another crazy thing. Mm. I know. But for the Les Paul, the Strats, I have a heavy gauge string. It's like 50. I want to say 53 is the E, and then 46 is the A, and then what I do is I move all those strings over, so actually the 46 is my E, so it's still really firm and thick, and the flats don't give at all like the other strings, so that's what I do with those.
Have you noticed a tone improvement by using the thicker strings, in your opinion?
Yes, it's so much thicker and so much more tone, much more sound when you hit the thing. You can actually hear it, you know.
It hangs.
Yeah.
Speaking of that, let's play another clip. This is one of my favorites, the 7, because it's got an odd rhythm in it, odd meter, and it's you have acoustic guitar in this too, but
yeah.
I think there's some electric stuff. That was your 175?
That's my 175 through the Boogie. And the acoustic guitar was just overdubbed because I could hear that. But the track was done live, including the solo, everything.
Yeah, so you did that, and then you went back and did the acoustic. The chords on the acoustic guitar just right on.
Thanks.
What were you using, Lou, on that?
That was the Music Man Stingray 5.
Oh, wow. Okay. I know that. Did you ever use your 61P on any of this?
No.
Wow, that's just, I'm so used to hearing
never
you.
Saw it.
But it's a great, great sound. That thing really just punches through.
It's the Music Man. It's before they, I guess around 91 or 92, they did an update, and they put a dummy pickup into the Music Man because they had a design flaw. When you ran the pickup as a humbucker, there would be a little bit of a buzz in the high end. And you're not going to really notice it unless you're listening to it for it. But some people did notice, and they didn't like it. So I think to address those concerns, Music Man created a dummy pickup and put it in.
And it gives it, the newer basses have more of a compressed sound because of that, whereas the older ones are a little more woolly.
Mm-hmm. What kind of strings are you using?
I'm using, I got to think of the name. I'm using Dunlops. Thank you. I've used so many different strings, but I'm using Dunlops right now.
Do you know your gauge?
The gauge is 45, 65, 85, 105, and 125.
Okay. So you use that on all of the basses?
I use that on everything. On everything.
Okay.
Everything. And they're usually round wounds.
Oh, wow. Round wounds on everything?
Yeah.
Okay. No, that's right. No, that would make sense because you have the overtones.
Yeah.
Flat wounds are...
Well,
so you use flat wounds on your fretless?
No. Those are round ones.
Wow. Okay.
Those are round ones.
That's a great... Yeah, that's a great sound. That's pretty cool. The... let's see. I want to play another clip real quick, and then we'll talk about your upcoming gigs. This is the funk piece that I pulled out. This is called Cruisin', and it's an interesting little groove here that I thought was
interesting. This is the first tune that we learned as a band.
Oh, okay.
He brought it in. He goes, hey, let's try this.
Okay, let's take a listen to it. Now that's the 175.
It's my 175.
Now you've never used the Les Paul. I'm surprised you never use a Les Paul or a Strat in any of the. But
you know, I'm trying to think now. Make sure. No, I didn't use any of those on this particular. No, I didn't. No.
It's a great sound though. I like that.
It's now the strings on that again. They're really thick strings, but I think the lowest one goes to a 56. My low E. That's, but you hear that when I'm, you can hear the smacking of the string.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hitting it really hard. That's why it's got that sound. No.
So. Which pickup do you end up using? Your bridge or your a neck?
That was the neck.
So yeah. Most of the time.
Oh, that was just the neck. That wasn't both of them.
No, it was just the neck.
That's amazing. Because it's pretty bright for the neck pickup.
Yeah. They did put a little bit of, I guess it was like a chorus on it, but that when I played it dry.
Mm. Yeah. No, it's a great sound. And then same thing, you're using the Music Man on that one?
Yep. Music Man. No bells, no whistles.
And
just me hands.
Just your hands.
Just me hands.
And then Jim, just the straight Yamaha kit?
Yeah. Definitely the Yamahas. Uh-huh.
Okay. Yep. Now, the difference between that album and production and the newer, the EP, obviously it was live, but any differences in miking it? As opposed to, I mean, what was the, because there's a change in the sound. There's a different sound change.
I think that has to do with the fact that everything on the first album is done digitally. Okay? And on the EP, we recorded the tracks on tape. We recorded the basic tracks at Slideaway Studios in Hidden Hills or whatever it is out there towards Tahunga. And, my friend Chuck Kavouris helped us out and said, hey, let's do this. But basically, we went to tape, and then we bumped it down to digital and went over to Pacifica Studios and did the overdubs.
Okay.
But that's why it sounds different, because we started out with tape.
Oh, okay. I mean, the first album is pretty ballsy, but the EP's punchy. I noticed it kicks.
I think that definitely has to do with the tape.
Yeah. Now, I just want to mention to everybody, because we're getting close to the end of the show, and you guys can fill in the gaps that I have. There, We3, you can check out We3 on Facebook as We_3.
Wait a minute, that's Twitter.
That's Twitter. I mean, at We, I am so spaced. Okay, at We_3 and at Lou Bassist. Do you guys, Jim? Bill, do you have a Twitter?
Yes, Twitter is Billy Joe Wiseman, exactly like that. And that's also my Facebook, too.
Okay, and Jim?
Not on Twitter, but definitely Facebook. Jim under Jim Xavier.
Oh, okay. And then Billy Joe, is that OE or?
It's OE. My parents and all my friends back home used to call me that for years, and just sort of stuck.
And then your actual webpage is www.we3.com.
That's correct.
Yes.
And if you want any information, it's info@we3.com. Is that your general email, or do you have another
mm-hmm.
one?
Mm-hmm. That's the info@we3.com. Okay. And that's we3, O-U-I.
Right.
The French version,
yes.
O-U-I3.com.
Okay. And then the... what's coming up for you guys? I know you're playing some gigs. Can you give us an idea what's happening?
YouTube channel.
Jim.
Yes, Lou.
Tell them all about it.
We have a few gigs this week.
We do have a few
I hope you're aware of this. No, actually, we're very happy. The past 3 years, we've played the Orange County Fair. And they gave us another week this year. So this upcoming week, starting on Wednesday... we'll be at the fair. Normally it's Wednesday through Sunday. This time there's something's going on that stage on the Thursday that they need it all night. So none of the usual acts are going to be on Thursday. So it's Wednesday the 24th and then Friday through Sunday, 26th through the 28th, about 7:30 to 10:30 or so.
Right. And then actually we should mention, but that Thursday that we're not playing at the fair, we'll be playing at Peasants, the Wine Bistro.
And Tarzan. And we have every other Thursday residency over there with our good friend Greg, the owner. And the really different cool thing about that one is can't have any amplification over there.
Oh,
so
wow.
Completely acoustic. Bill's on
unplugged.
Acoustic guitar.
Yes.
Lou's on upright. Bill's on acoustic guitar. I'm playing as quiet as humanly possible on drums. And much more. We still do a lot of our material, but we mix in a lot more of the real book,
okay,
swingy, jazzy stuff over there as well.
Now, can I mention? Lou had told me, I don't know if I can put the cat out of the bag. You guys are working on a video or something?
Oh yeah, we have a song that we're going to be releasing real soon that we did with the sax player John Clemmer.
Oh wow, okay.
And basically, it's one of the songs off the EP called After Hours.
Okay.
So we got introduced to John, and we actually played the song for him. He goes, yeah. He goes, I'd like to do something on that. So we did a track with him, and we're just finishing up a video. We don't have a release date yet. We're still having to iron out a couple little things, but it should be before the end of the year, maybe mm-hmm. a little sooner.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, let us know.
Oh, yeah.
We'll spread the word.
Absolutely.
I want to thank everybody for being here. I mean, I didn't even get a chance to play the After Hours clip. I had a clip for that, but we're at the end of our show.
Well, you could play it on the way out.
Actually, I was going to play the end of...
okay, well, then never mind.
She knows she's got it.
She's got it.
She's got it.
So that the original name is You Know She Wants It is not the name?
No.
She's got it.
I don't know if she does or not. She didn't tell me.
Because I was thinking, like, what do we got the jazz ZZ Top in here?
Minus the beards.
Yes.
But anyway, thank you guys so much.
Keep
us posted what you're doing, and we'll put it up on our Facebook page. Check out these guys. There's some great stuff. The EP you can get on, is that on Amazon?
Everything's on iTunes.
iTunes. Yes.
Okay.
CD
so
Baby?
It's really a good album. I think you guys will really like it. Anyway, thanks again to have you guys on here. It's just a real pleasure, and we'll have to have you on again.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Okay,
yep.
I'm going to take go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to mention next week we have Jason Sine. We'll be talking vintage guitars. This guy's played with just like everybody. He's Neil Diamond. He had Keith Richards. We got all kinds of pictures of him playing
with
everybody.
He's got a great band. He's very good.
And on top of that, again, reminder for anyone out there, make sure you register for the Eminence Governor Speaker Giveaway. It's the last week to do so.
Yes, that is totally cool. Okay, guys, I'm going to leave. This is the ending of She Knows She's Got It, a beautiful track. And thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week, and thank you, guys. Here we go.